clashes with police and riot gear. Violent protests on the streets of Bolivia.
The pressure's being kept on Bolivia's authorities to look again at the disputed results of Sunday's presidential election.
Evo Morales left Bolivia after requesting asylum in Mexico.
This is Vice News Reports. I'm your host, Ariel Zomaras.
And I'm Ben Cruz Caña.
So, Ben, we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon, November 4th. And as, of course, you know, we are still in the middle of the 2020 election. We still have no idea who will be the next president of the United States.
Yeah, I mean, really feels like a coin toss right now.
We all knew this was a possibility, right? That we wouldn't know on election night who won. But the reason I brought you in, Ben, and for those who are listening, Ben is actually a sound designer here at Vice Audio. The reason I brought you in is because when we were planning for this week's episode, we were trying to figure out how do we cover an election that doesn't end on election night. And you brought up issues following Bolivia's elections last year.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of similarities between what is happening in the U.S. right now and what happened in Bolivia last year, especially in regards to this notion of uncertainty.
And from what I understand, this was personal for you because you're a U.S. citizen, but you're also Bolivian, and you spent half your life in Bolivia.
Yeah, that's right. And what happened a year ago when we had our presidential elections in Bolivia was that there were complications with the vote count. And that sparked chaos for weeks.
Indigenous President Evo Morales became the latest leader in Latin America to fall victim to a military coup backed by...
We actually didn't have a president for a couple of days, and there was a void of power.
First of all, this is the story of an authoritarian regime that people in Bolivia...
And that led to panic and paranoia in Bolivia, which set us on a path where racism was on full display and the country was extremely divided.
Nadie se rinde. Huevo carajo. Huevo carajo.
I watched it from afar, primarily Facebook, WhatsApp, and Twitter.
So obviously here in the United States, we are not there. The U.S. still has a president and we're waiting for results. But what struck me about your comparison to Bolivia and what you and others experienced then was that there is a world in which, if we're not careful over the next few hours, days, weeks even, the U.S. could experience extreme disinformation and instability, which is what Bolivia experienced a year ago. And I don't want to be alarmist, but I do think that it's useful to talk about Bolivia to better understand what's going on in the U.S. right now.
I definitely agree with you, except I don't just think that this is a lesson for the U.S. alone. I think that looking at what happened in Bolivia last year can be a lesson for the world, and especially a lesson for Bolivians.
For people who don't know a ton about Bolivia, what do they need to know?
So Bolivia is a country of more than 11 million people, where the majority of people are of indigenous descent. And Bolivia does have a history of political instability. In the early 2000s, the country had been through 5 presidents in about 5 years. This had a lot to do with resources like water and gas and the privatization of those resources. And on top of that, there was widespread inequality in the country that goes back centuries. And so the election of Evo Morales in 2005 was in part a response to that, and it was a call for change.
His election was also a huge deal for other reasons, right? I think he's Bolivia's first indigenous president.
Right. So this is a very important point. He's of Aymara descent, which is one of the largest indigenous groups in the country.
Coca leaves played a decisive role in the life of Morales himself. He started his political career as leader of the Cocalera trade union.
He came up as a union leader representing coca farmers. He's considered a leftist. His political party, Movement Towards Socialism, is known as MAS.
In his presidential campaign, Evo promised to nationalize the country's gas industry, rid it of U.S. influence, and legalize coca growing.
the voices of Cocalera.
So tell me about like what it was like when he was elected for you.
In Bolivia, the country's first ever indigenous president, Evo Morales, was sworn in Sunday.
I was a teenager when he got elected in 2005. And I remember feeling very good about it, like something was changing in our country.
He focused his nearly two-hour inaugural address on bringing justice to Bolivia's indigenous majority.
Evo's government did a lot for the country. By many standards, the economy grew at twice the rate of the rest of Latin America. Extreme poverty was significantly reduced. And the country rewrote the constitution and changed the name to specifically acknowledge the indigenous makeup of Bolivia.
And that's a big deal, right? Like, this is a moment where the country is recognizing the diversity of its population and recognizing the more than 30, I think, indigenous groups that reside in Bolivia.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Huipala flag with its multicolored squares representing indigenous people also became a national symbol for the country.
As Evo Morales claimed victory in the country's election on Sunday, he's been re-elected as the Bolivian leader.
So he was re-elected twice.
Re-elected again and again. Evo Morales's everyman image and gleaming economic track record has placed him on this presidential balcony three times in under 10 years.
In fact, he was in office for 14 years, but there are a lot of people who didn't support his policies and what he was doing for Bolivia for his entire tenure. And at the end of his third term, Evo decided he wanted to stay in office. And to make a long story short, the authorities decided that not letting Evo run again would be a violation of his human rights. It was a highly politicized decision.
Morales has governed during a period of stability and prosperity in Bolivia, but has faced pushback. Many voters are also unhappy that Morales ignored a 2016 referendum which barred him from running for a fourth term in office.
It felt to a lot of people that he was trying to be in power forever.
Now he's dealing with the backlash. Millions have turned out for huge civil society meetings called cabildos. Former ombudsman Rolando...
Okay, so clearly this pisses off a bunch of people, but he runs anyway.
Yeah, so the day of the election was Sunday, October 20th. This was in 2019. A bunch of political parties were in the running, but it was really down to Evo and the former president of Bolivia, Carlos Mesa. And it was tense going in, and there was like some political turmoil. But I don't think we had a very clear idea or a clear notion of how fucked up things were going to get. So, election night was tense. We all knew Evo was going to win, but we didn't know by what margin. And most people were paying attention to what's called the quick count.
Quick count, that's like exit polls, right?
Yeah, this quick count result usually comes in on election night. And at the time, the quick count indicated that Evo was winning, but not by enough to win in the first round. Then, all of a sudden,
the electoral authority stopped updating results on its website on Sunday night.
The quick count stops.
Why did it stop?
So at the time, no one knew exactly why. But of course, a lot of people thought that it was Evo's side and the government trying to stop a count that wasn't going in his favor.
Okay, so people thought this was like a fraudulent election.
A lot of people were saying it was fraud. Other people were defending the government, saying it was a technicality. But the reality was that there was just no way to know for sure what was happening. And so I think that this was a culmination of different elements coming together. People were already pissed at the government for an array of other reasons. And the perception of fraud was basically the match that lit the fire, if you will.
Ben, how are you experiencing the election at this point?
I'm basically in my apartment in Brooklyn, looking at the images that are coming through right after the election and the day after the election. I think there was a sense that things were going south and in a very quick manner. Violent confrontations on the streets, police using tear gas, people exiting those confrontations all bloodied up. It was very awful images to be witnessing and seeing online.
So you're seeing all of this come through on social media?
Yeah. Logging onto Facebook, videos getting shared by WhatsApp.
There's a lot of misinformation, I can only assume. How are you figuring out what's real at this point?
There was an element of confusion. Four days after the quick count stops, they finish counting the votes.
Y el MAS y PSP con 46.83%.
And Evo was officially declared winner.
Ya ganamos en la primera vuelta.
And he was set to take office for his fourth term. But many people didn't trust this result, and they thought that Evo had committed election fraud. And things began to escalate even more after that.
How exactly do things escalate?
Well, you saw more people turning against the government. There were massive blockades. There was police repression. There were violent clashes amongst protesters. People were shooting fireworks at each other. They were attacking each other with sticks and dynamite. They were throwing rocks at each other. And unfortunately, some people died because of these clashes. Our country was at war, and this went on for weeks. And some people were even speculating that Evo might not make it out alive.
Wait, so you mean that there were rumors that President Evo Morales was now in danger of being killed?
Yeah. On November 10th, the army chief suggests and urges Evo to resign. In order to pacify the country. And on that Sunday,
las hermanas y hermanos de Bolivia, a todo el mundo entero,
Evo resigns.
Renunciar a mi cargo de presidencia.
I checked in with my cousin right after, and he was like, "Se fue," which means he left, he's gone, and that was it. It was very hard to put into words what I was feeling at that moment. I was as confused, as upset as I was up until that moment. We had a realization to deal with, that there was a void of power in the country. And what you do with that, who knows? No one knows.
We'll be right back. Morales resigned a year ago, on November 10th, after there were these huge protests against perceived election fraud, and after Evo Morales was asked by the head of the military to resign, even though by all accounts he won the election. So at this point, Bolivia doesn't have a president. What happened next?
So my cousins were texting me constantly. One cousin was telling me that the water had gotten shut down and that there were people out in the streets. Another cousin said that he was arming himself to the teeth. We didn't know who was going to take power of the country. We felt like Bolivia was on the verge of civil war. This void in power left us all feeling extremely vulnerable. I remember that Monday was the first time I actually broke down and cried. I think it was a lot of pent-up energy from the previous 3 weeks that we'd all been going through. You know, it's a painful experience for me to revisit, but I wanted to get the perspective from a Bolivian who was there and from somebody who lived through the entirety of the situation. Carlos Macusay is an author and he's of indigenous descent. He's Aymara, like Evo Morales, and in 2005 when Evo was elected, it made him emotional.
fue como un momento como fue como muy, muy rápido pensar en mi papá y mi mamá.
He thought of his father and of his mother and how Evo is of their same origin.
Que se iba a posicionar a alguien del origen de Evo Morales, que era el mismo origen mío, era el origen de mis padres, fue fuerte. Y no solo mí, muchas personas, yo veía emoción, había gente que derramaba lágrimas. Fue un momento muy, muy, muy emotivo. Y uno veía en la
the night that Evo resigned, Carlos remembers the loss.
Rostro de derrota.
On the faces of his neighbors.
Mucha gente que prefirió no manifestarse, no hacer movilización, no salir a defender.
He said many of them didn't protest or defend Evo, but they were critical of him.
No hacer nada, terminaron como en una resignación y había una cara de tristeza, yo recuerdo en la gente eso.
But in that moment, people felt defeated.
Porque después de las denuncias de Evo Morales, ya van a ser explícitamente racistas, ya no van a.
And according to Carlos, this is when things went from bad to worse. In part because the racism that was already present at the time in the country became overt. You couldn't miss it. On the day of Evo's resignation, one of the major leaders of the opposition, a far-right religious conservative named Luis Fernando Camacho, entered the Palacio Quemado, Bolivian's presidential palace, with the Bible and the Bolivian flag in his hands. And he basically kneels on the floor to pray.
Estas imágenes siguen siendo del sector en donde, claro, se abrieron las puertas del Camacho. Y ahí está Luis Fernando Camacho.
Outside the Palacio Quemado, one of his supporters proclaims,
"Estamos viendo al Palacio de Gobierno. Nunca más volverá la Pachamama."
That the Pachamama will never return to the Palacio Quemado, and that today Christ is returning to the government palace, and that Bolivia is for Christ.
Pachamama, that's like Mother Earth, right?
Exactly. So essentially saying that Pachamama will never return is a way of saying indigenous people won't return to the positions of power within the Bolivian state.
At this point, Evo's gone, right? He's left Bolivia.
Yeah, Evo had left Bolivia and went to Mexico, where he was offered asylum. And one by one, Evo's successors begin to resign, or they had already resigned. And ultimately, about 3 weeks after the election, the conservative Christian Janine Áñez of the opposition's Democratic Social Movement Party, who was technically next in line, assumed the presidency.
La presidenta está llegando al antiguo Palacio Presidencial con una Biblia, al parecer.
She held an oversized Bible and declared herself interim president, saying that the Bible had returned to the palace.
La Biblia vuelve al palacio.
Un momento simbólico por lo que vemos.
I think it was a move representative of the sector of society that she comes from that has very little appreciation for indigenous people, generally speaking. So her saying that was essentially a big fuck you to all those people. In the center of La Paz, after the resignation, Huipala flags were lowered and burned, and there were also some police officers who were cutting the Huipala flags from their uniforms. Carlos remembers hearing an older woman with gray hair wearing indigenous clothing say, "If that's what they do to the Huipala flag, what will they do to me?" It had now been almost a week since Evo had resigned, and my sense was that things really couldn't get much worse. But that was until November 15th. And that's when everything really just imploded. The first massacre took place in a city called Sacaba, almost a month after the election. Security forces fired on unarmed protesters, and at least 11 people died. Most, if not all, of the dead were indigenous coca farmers from the area that Evo Morales came up in as a union leader. The second massacre took place on November 19th in Sencata, a district in El Alto, which is a city above La Paz. And at least 9 people were killed by the army and police when they were demonstrating near a gas refinery. Carlos says that for the working class people in La Paz, the massacre was a breaking point. Like, it had stopped being about whether or not you wanted Evo back or not, and was much more about human rights, much more about indigenous people being targets. He saw on social media how people would essentially laugh at the images of those who died, and they would add insult to injury by saying that, oh, we need to put a bullet in them. On November 21st, a month after the election, Carlos attended a march where the dead were carried from Sencata to La Paz's central plaza.
Justicia para nuestros caídos, hermanos.
It's essentially a funeral procession. It's a gathering. The coffins have huipalas on top of them, as well as flowers. Now you hear people exclaiming in the background that what we want is justice.
Justicia! 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 Justicia!
This eventually becomes into a march that goes down into the city of La Paz. Thousands of people marching down with the coffins into the city. And this is the march that Carlos joins. He's filming it live. He's there. For Carlos, who has been active in protests for over half of his life, he thought that this march was impressive.
Queremos justicia para el alto.
Justicia para Bolivia. Justicia para Bolivia.
Que se vaya esta maldita.
Near the center of the city, the marchers were tear gassed and forced to flee. And at one point, the people that were carrying the coffins had to leave them in the streets to seek shelter. Time was slow. The days were long. And nothing ever really got better. You know, it just kind of just went down, down, down. You know, it's like it reached an explosive point.
So in a matter of days, a few weeks really, there was a 180-degree change in Bolivia.
Carlos didn't want Bolivia to be a place where suddenly people of color and indigenous people didn't have the same rights. And that's why he marched. To denounce racism. And he felt like that was the spirit of a lot of the protests that followed.
So, Ben, I heard that you went back to Bolivia around this time. What led you to go back?
I was told that my grandfather had passed away, and so I immediately booked a flight to La Paz just a few days after the massacre. I'm there for a funeral, essentially, but I'm also there to just see after having experienced from afar and read about and heard about all these things that were happening. And I was just really, really happy to be there with them, sharing for sure a very sad moment, but also being present with the people that I love.
Bolivia
is in desperate need of political stability. And these elections are crucial to guarantee the next president has the legitimacy needed to help the country recover.
So, Ben, this year, actually just a few weeks ago on October 18th, Bolivia had a presidential election. And from my perspective, it seemed like people were once again preparing for the worst. But actually, it was peaceful.
International observers, including the Organization of American States, said the vote was generally free and fair.
And the MAS candidate, the candidate from the party of Evo Morales, Luis Arce, won. And he's going to be inaugurated on November 8th.
Yeah, and Evo says he's going to come back to Bolivia.
The thing that I've been wondering the whole time that I've been listening to you talk about last year in the Bolivian election has been how you're feeling now as a person who's also from the United States, as you're watching the U.S. elections unfold. You know, what's your emotional state having gone through this just last year?
Well, to be honest, I have a high level of anxiety in regards to the anticipation of what's going to happen here. I felt like things escalated much more quickly in Bolivia. The response in the streets was immediate. I think that here in the United States, it's taking its time. You know, we're not going to know who won, and people aren't necessarily active in the streets. And we're not seeing violent encounters. And I think that's fantastic. But of course, I'm still anxious, because no matter how you put it, the foundational problems of our society here are going to persist. It doesn't matter who wins in that regard. And I think my hope is that people maintain themselves psychologically and emotionally. This stuff is very stressful, and I think it's important to recognize the emotional toll and take a minute and breathe a little bit and make an analysis from there.
Special thanks to filmmakers Noah Friedman-Rudofsky and Martin Sivak. Look out for their forthcoming documentary about President Evo Morales. Vice News Reports is produced by Jesse Alejandro Cottrell, Jen Kinney, Janice Yamoka, and Julia Nutter. Our senior producers are Ashley Cleek and Adiza Egan. Our associate producers are Sam Egan and Sophie Kazis. Sound design and music composition by Steve Bone and Kyle Murdoch. Our executive producer and VP of Vice Audio is Kate Osborne. Janet Lee is senior production manager for Vice Audio. Production coordination by Steph Brown. From iHeart executive producer Mangesh Hatikador and senior producer Nikki Etor. Fact-checking by Jeff Peer. Legal review by Yoni Berkovitz. Our theme music is by Steve Bone. Production coordination assistance from Tarasai Gombe. Security by Rami Galli and Charbel Namor. I'm Ariel Dimross. I know podcast hosts say this constantly, but seriously, please rate and review this podcast. It really helps other people find the show. If you want to get in touch with us, you can reach the VNR team by emailing us at vicenewsreports@vice.com. Vice News Reports drops every Thursday, everywhere you get your podcasts. So be sure to check back in next week.